bony as skeleton sticks, contrasted with the huge bulging of her pregnant belly. There were great dark circles under her eyes, and the lids were red as if sore with long weeping. But in all the moons Morgaine had been in this house, Morgause hadn't seen the younger woman shed a single tear. "I would comfort her, but how can I if she doesn't weep?" Morgaine was wearing an old gown of Morgause's own, a faded and threadbare kirtle of dark blue, grotesquely too long. She looked clumsy, almost slatternly, and it exasperated Morgause that her kinswoman hadn't even troubled to take needle and thread and shorten the dress somewhat. Her ankles, too, were swollen so that they bulged over her shoe-tops. That was from having only salt fish and coarse vegetables to eat at this time of the year. They all needed fresh food, which wasn't easy to come by in this weather. Well, perhaps the men would have some luck at hunting, and she could induce Morgaine to eat some of the fresh meat. After 4 pregnancies of her own, Morgause knew the near starvation of late pregnancy. Once, she remembered, when she was pregnant with Gawain, she had gone into the dairy and eaten some of the clay they kept for whitening it. An old midwife had told her that when a pregnant woman cannot keep herself from eating such strange things, it is the child that hungers, and she should feed him whatever he wishes for. Maybe tomorrow there would be fresh herbs by the mountain stream. That was something every pregnant woman craved, especially in late winter like this. Morgaine's beautiful dark hair was tangled, too, in a loose braid. It looked as if she hadn't combed or rebraided it for weeks. She turned from the fire now, took down a comb that was kept on the shelf, picked up one of Morgause's little lapdogs, and began combing it. Morgause thought, "You would be better occupied at combing your own hair." But she held her peace. Morgaine had been so edgy lately that there was no speaking to her at all. It was natural enough, so near her time, she thought, watching the younger woman's bony hands pulling the comb through the matted hair. The little dog yelped and whined, and Morgaine hushed him in a softer voice than she ever used to anything human these days. "It cannot be long now, Morgaine," Morgause said gently. "By Candlemas, surely you will be delivered." "It can't be too soon for me." Morgaine gave the dog a final pat and set him on the floor. "There, now you are decent to be among ladies, puppy. How fine you are with your hair all smooth." "I'll make up the fire," said one of the women, whose name was Beth, putting aside her spindle and thrusting the distaff into a basket of loose wool. "The men will be home, surely. It's already dark." She went over to the fire, tripped on a loose stick, and half fell on the hearth. "Gareth, you little wretch, will you clear away this rubbish?" She flung the stick into the fire, and 5-year-old Gareth, who had been pushing the sticks about and prattling to them in an undertone, set up a howl of outrage. The sticks were his armies. "Well, Gareth, it's night, and your armies must go to their tents," said Morgause briskly. Pouting, the little boy pushed the array of small sticks into a corner, but one or two he put carefully into a fold of his tunic. They were thicker ones, which Morgaine, earlier that year, had carved into the crude likeness of men in helmets and armour, dyed with berry juice for their crimson tunics.
"Will you make me another Roman knight, Morgaine?"
"Not now, Gareth," she said. "My hands ache with the cold. Tomorrow, perhaps." He came and scowled, standing at her knee, demanding,
"When will I be old enough to go hunting with Father and Agravine?"
"It will be a few years still, I suppose," said Morgaine, smiling. "Not until you are tall enough not to be lost in a snowdrift."
"I'm big," he said, drawing himself up to his full height. "Look, when you're sitting down, I'm taller than you are, Morgaine."
He kicked restlessly at the chair.
There's nothing to do in here.
Well, said Morgaine, I could always teach you to spin, and then you needn't be idle.
She picked up Beth's abandoned distaff and held it out to him, but he made a face and started back.
I'm going to be a knight. Knights don't have to spin.
That's a pity,
Beth said sourly. Perhaps they wouldn't wear out so many cloaks and tunics if they knew what toil it is to spin them.
Yet there was a knight who did spin, so the tale says, Morgaine said, holding out her arms to the little boy. Come here. No, sit on the bench, Gareth. You are all too heavy now for me to hold you on my lap like a sucking babe.
There was in the old days, before the Romans came, a knight named Achilles, and he was under a curse. An old sorceress told his mother that he would die in battle, and so she put him into skirts and hid him among the women, where he learned to spin and to weave and do all that was fitting for a maiden.
And did he die in battle?
He did indeed. For when the city of Troy was besieged, they called on all the knights and warriors to come and take it, and Achilles went with the rest. And he was the best of all the knights. It was told of him that he was offered a choice. He could live long in safety, then die an old man in his bed and be forgotten, or he could live a short life and die young with great glory. And he chose the glory. So men still tell of his story in the sagas. He fought with a knight in Troy called Hector. Hectorius, that is, in our tongue.
Was it that same Sir Hectorius who fostered our King Arthur?
Asked the little boy, wide-eyed.
To be sure it was not,
for it was many hundred years ago, but it might have been one of his forefathers.
When I'm at court, and one of Arthur's companions, said Gareth, his eyes round as saucers, I will be the best fighter in war, and I will win all the prizes when there are games.
What happened to Achilles?
I remember it not. It was long ago at Uther's court I heard the tale,
Morgaine said, pressing her hands against her back as if it hurt her.
Tell me about Arthur's knights, Morgaine. You've really seen Lancelot, have you not?
I saw him that day at the king's crowning.
Has he killed any dragons? Tell me, Morgaine.
Don't plague her, Gareth. She's not well, said Morgaine. Run out to the kitchens and see if they can find you some bannock.
The child looked sulky, but he took his carved knight out of his tunic and went off, talking to it in an undertone.
So, Sir Lancelot, we will go out and we will kill all the dragons in the lake.
That one, he talks only of war and fighting, said Morgaine impatiently, and his precious Lancelot, as if it were not enough to have Gawain away with Arthur at the wars. I hope that when Gareth is old enough, there will be peace in the land.
There will be peace, Morgaine said absently, but it won't matter, for he will die at the hands of his dearest friend.
What?
Cried Morgaine, staring. But the younger woman's eyes were vacant and unfocused. Morgaine shook her gently and demanded,
Morgaine?
Morgaine?
Are you ill?
Morgaine blinked and shook her head.
I'm sorry. What did you say to me?
What did I say to you? What, rather, did you say to me?
Morgaine demanded. But at the look of distress in Morgaine's eyes, her skin prickled. She stroked the younger woman's hand, dismissing the grim words as delirium.
I think you must have been dreaming with your eyes wide open.
She found that she didn't want to think that Morgaine might have had a moment of the sight.
You must care for yourself better, Morgaine. You hardly eat, you don't sleep.
Food sickens me, Morgaine said, sighing.
Would it were summer that I might have some fruit. Last night I dreamed I ate of the apples of Avalon. Her voice trembled, and she lowered her head so that Morgause wouldn't see the tears hanging from her lashes. But she clenched her hands and didn't weep.
"We are all weary of salt fish and smoked bacon," said Morgause. "But if Lot has had good hunting, you must eat some of the fresh meat."
Morgaine, she thought, had been trained in Avalon to ignore hunger and thirst and fatigue. Now, pregnant, when she should relax her austerities somewhat, she took pride in enduring everything without complaint.
"You are priestess trained, Morgaine, hardened to fasting. But your child cannot endure hunger and thirst, and you are far too thin."
"Don't mock me," Morgaine said angrily, gesturing at her enormously swollen belly.
"But your hands and face are like bare bone," said Morgause. "You mustn't starve yourself like this. You have a child, and you must consider him."
"I will consider his welfare when he considers mine," Morgaine said, rising abruptly. But Morgause took her hands and drew her down again.
"Dear child,
I know what you're going through. I have borne 4 children, remember? These last few days are worse than all the long months combined. I should have had the sense to be rid of it while there was time."
Morgause opened her mouth for a sharp answer, then sighed and said,
"It's too late to say you should have done so or so. 10 days more will bring it to an end."
She took her own comb from her tunic folds and began to unravel Morgaine's tangled braid.
"Let it be," said Morgaine restlessly, pulling her head away from the comb. "I'll do it myself tomorrow. I've been too weary to think of it. But if you're sick of looking at me all bedraggled like this, well, give me the comb."
"Sit still, Lenarvan," said Morgause. "Don't you remember, when you were a little girl at Tintagel, you used to cry for me to comb your hair because your nurse... what was her name? Now I remember. Gwenys. That was it. She used to pull your hair so, and you would say, 'Let Aunt Morgause do it.'"
She teased the comb through the tangles, smoothing out strand after strand, and stroked Morgaine's head affectionately.
"You have lovely hair. Dark and coarse as a pony's mane in winter."
"No. Fine as the wool of a black sheep and shining like silk," Morgause said, still stroking the dark strands. "Hold still. I'll plait it for you." "Always I've wished for a girl child, so that I could dress her finely and plait her hair like this. But the goddess sent me only sons. And so you must just be my little daughter now when you need me."
She pulled the dark head against her breast, and Morgaine lay there, shaking with the tears she couldn't shed.
"Ah, there, there, my little one. Don't cry. It won't be long now. There, there. You haven't been taking good care of yourself. You need a mother's care, my little girl."
It's so dark here. I long so for the sun."
"In the summer we have more than our share of sunlight. It's light even to midnight," said Morgause. "And so in winter we get so little."
Morgaine was still shaking with uncontrollable sobs, and Morgause held her close, rocking her gently.
"There, little one, Lenarvan.
There. I know how you feel.
I bore Gawain in the darkest time of winter. It was dark and stormy like this, and I was only 16 years old then, and very frightened. I knew so little of bearing children. I wished then that I'd stayed to be priestess at Avalon, or at Uther's court, or anywhere but here. Lot was away at the wars. I hated my big body. I was sick all the time, and my back hurt, and I was all alone with only strange women.
Would you believe, all that winter, I kept my old doll secretly in my bed and held her and cried myself every night to sleep. Such a baby I was.
You, at least, are a woman grown, Morgaine.
Morgaine said, choking, I know I'm too old to be such a baby. But still she clung to Morgause, while the older woman petted and stroked her hair.
And now that same babe I bore even before I was a grown woman is away fighting with the Saxons, she said. And you, whom I held on my lap like a doll, you are to have a babe of your own.
Oh, yes. I knew there was news I meant to tell you. The cook's wife, Margaret, has borne her child. No doubt that was why the porridge was so full of husk this morning. So there will be a wet nurse ready at hand for yours. Though, indeed, when you see him, I doubt not you will want to suckle him yourself. Morgaine made a gesture of revulsion, and Morgause smiled.
So I felt myself, before each of my sons was born. But when I looked once on their faces, I felt I could never let them out of my arms.
She felt the younger woman flinch.
What is it, Morgaine?
My back aches. I've been sitting too long, that's all, Morgaine said, rising restlessly and wandering around the room, her hands clasped at the small of her back. Morgause narrowed her eyes thoughtfully. Yes, in the last few days the girl's bulging belly was carried lower. It couldn't be long now. She should have the woman's hall filled with fresh straw and speak to the midwives to be at hand for the lying in. Lot's men had found a deer on the hills. Skinned and cleaned, the smell roasting over the great fire filled the whole of the castle, and even Morgaine didn't refuse a slice of the raw liver dripping blood. By custom, this food was saved for such of the women as were with child. Morgause could see her grimace with revulsion, as she herself had done when such things were given to her in her own pregnancies. But Morgaine, as Morgause had done, sucked at it with avidity, her body demanding the nourishment, even as her mind revolted. Later, though, when the meat was cooked, and carvers were slicing it and carrying it around, she gestured refusal. Morgause took a slice of meat and laid it on Morgaine's dish.
"Eat it," she commanded. "No, Morgaine, I will be obeyed. You cannot starve yourself and your child this way."
"I can't," said Morgaine in a low voice. "I'll be sick. Put it by, and I'll try to eat it later."
"What's wrong?"
Morgaine lowered her head and muttered, "I can't eat the meat of deer. I ate it at Beltane when... And now the very smell sickens me." And this child was gotten at Beltane at the ritual fires. What is it that troubles her so? That memory should be a pleasant one, Morgause thought, smiling at the memory of the Beltane license. She wondered if the girl had fallen into the hands of some particularly brutish man and had undergone something like rape. That would account for her rage and despair at this pregnancy. Still, done was done, and Morgaine was old enough to know that not all men were brutes, even if she had once fallen into the hands of one who was neither gentle nor skilled with women. Morgause took a slice of oatcake and sopped it in the meat juice in the dish.
"Eat this, then. You'll get the good of the meat so," she said. "And I've made you some tea with the hips of roses. It's sour and will taste good to you. I remember how I craved sour things when I was breeding."
Morgaine ate obediently, and it seemed to Morgause that a little colour came into her face. She made a face at the sourness of the drink, but drank it down thirstily nonetheless. "I don't like it," she said. "But how strange! I can't stop drinking it.
Your child craves it, said Morgause seriously. Babes in the womb know what's good for them, and they demand it of us.
Lot, sitting at his ease between two of his huntsmen, smiled amiably at his sister-in-law.
An old skinny animal, but a good dinner for late winter, he said. And I'm just as glad we didn't get a breeding doe. We saw two or three of them, but I told my men to let them be, and even called off the dogs. I want the deer to drop their fawns in peace, and I could see that time is near, so many of them were heavy.
He yawned, taking up small Gareth, whose face was greasy and shining with the meat.
"Soon you'll be big enough to go hunting with us," he said. "You and the little Duke of Cornwall, no doubt."
"Who's the Duke of Cornwall, father?" Gareth asked.
"Why, the babe Morgaine carries,"
Lot replied, smiling. And Gareth stared at Morgaine.
"I don't see any baby. Where's your baby, Morgaine?"
Morgaine chuckled uneasily.
"Next month, at this time, I shall show him to you." "Will the spring maiden bring it to you?"
"You could say so,"
Morgaine said, smiling despite herself.
"How can a baby be a duke?"
"My father was Duke of Cornwall. I am his only child in marriage. When Arthur came to reign, he gave Tintagel back to Igraine. It'll pass from her to me and to my sons, if I have any." Morgause, looking at the young woman, thought, "Her son stands nearer the throne than my own Gawain.
I am full sister to Igraine, and Vivian but her half-sister. Sir Gawain is nearer kin than Lancelot. But Morgaine's son will be Arthur's nephew."
I wonder if Morgaine has thought of that.
"Certainly then, Morgaine, your son is Duke of Cornwall."
"Or Duchess,"
said Morgaine, smiling again.
"No, I can tell by the way you carry, low and broad, that it will be a son," said Morgause. "I've borne four, and I've watched my women through pregnancies."
She grinned maliciously at Lot and said,
"My husband takes very seriously that old writing which says that a king should be father to his people."
Lot said good-naturedly,
"I think it only right for my true-born sons by my queen to have many foster brothers. Bear is back, they say, without brother, and my sons are many. Come, kinswoman, will you take the harp and sing for us?"
Morgaine pushed aside the remnant of gravy-soaked oat-cake. "I've eaten too much for singing," she said, frowning, and began to pace the hall again, and Morgause again saw her hands pressed to her back. Gareth came and tugged at her skirt.
"Sing to me. Sing me that song about the dragon, Morgaine."
"It's too long for tonight. You must be away to your bed," she said. But she went to the corner, took up the small harp that stood there, and sat on a bench. She plucked a few notes at random, bent to adjust one of the strings, then broke into a rowdy drinking song of the armies. Lot joined in the chorus, as did his men, their raucous voices ringing up to the smoky beams.
"The Saxons came in dark of night, with all the folk asleep. They killed off all the women, for they'd rather rape the sheep." "You never learned that song in Avalon, kinswoman,"
Lot said, grinning, as Morgaine rose to replace the harp.
"Sing again,"
Gareth teased, but she shook her head.
"I'm too short of breath now for singing," she said.
She put the harp down and took up her spindle, but after a moment or two put it aside and once more began pacing the hall.
"What ails you, girl?" Lot asked. "You're restless as a caged bear."
"My back aches with sitting," she said, "and that meat my aunt would have me eat has given me a bellyache after all."
She held her hands again to her back, and bent over suddenly as if with a cramp. Then suddenly she gave a startled cry, and Morgause, watching,
saw the too long kirtle turn dark and wet, soaking her to the knees.
"Oh, Morgaine, you've wet yourself," Gareth cried out. "You're too big to wet your clothes."
"My nurse would beat me for that."
"Hush, Gareth," Morgause said sharply, and hurried to Morgaine, who stood bent over, her face crimson with astonishment and shame.
"It's all right, Morgaine," she said, taking her by the arm. "Does it hurt you here?"
"And here?"
"I thought as much."
"You're in labour, that's all. Didn't you know?" But how should the girl know? It was her first, and she was never one for listening to women's gossip, so she wouldn't know the signs. For much of this day she must have been feeling the first pains. She called Beth and said, "Take the Duchess of Cornwall to the women's hall, and call Megan and Branwen. And take down her hair. She must have nothing knotted or bound about her, or her clothing." She added, stroking Morgaine's hair, "I would that I had known this sooner this day when I braided your hair." "I'll come down soon and stay with you, Morgaine." She watched the girl go out, leaning heavily on the nurse's arm. She said to Lot, "I must go and stay with her. It's her first time, and she'll be frightened, poor girl."
"There's no hurry," Lot said idly. "If it's her first, she'll be in labour all this night, and you'll have time to hold her hand."
He gave his wife a good-natured smile.
"You're quick to bring our Gawain's rival into the world."
"What do you mean?" she asked low.
"Only this, that Arthur and Morgaine were born of one womb, and her son stands nearer the throne than ours."
"Arthur is young," Morgause said coldly, "and has time enough to father a dozen sons. Why should you think he has need of an heir?" Lot shrugged.
"Fate is fickle," he said. "Arthur bears a charmed life in battle, and I doubt not that the Lady of the Lake had something to do with that, damn her. And Gawain is all too loyal to his king."
"But fate may turn away from Arthur. And if that day should come, I would like to know that Gawain stood closest to the throne."
"Think well, Morgause. The life of an infant is uncertain. You might do well to beseech your goddess that the little Duke of Cornwall should not draw a second breath."
"How could I do that to Morgaine? She's like my own daughter." Lot chucked his wife affectionately under the chin. He said,
"You're a loving mother, Morgause, and I wouldn't have you otherwise. But I doubt if Morgaine is so eager to have a child in her arms. I've heard her say that she wished she had cast forth her child."
"She was ill and weary," said Morgause angrily.
"Do you think I didn't say as much when I was weary of dragging round a great belly? Any woman says such things in the last few moons of her pregnancy."
"Still, if Morgaine's child should be born without breath, I don't think she would grieve overmuch.
Nor, this is what I'm saying, should you."
Morgause defended her kinswoman. "She's good to our Gareth. She has made him toys and playthings and told him tales. I'm sure she'll be just as good a mother to her own."
"Yet it is not to our interest or our son's that Morgaine should think of her son as Arthur's heir."
He put his arm around his wife.
"Look, sweeting, you and I have four sons, and no doubt when they're all grown they'll be at one another's throats. Lúthien is not so big a kingdom as all that. But if Gawain were High King, then there would be kingdoms enough for them all."
She nodded slowly.
Lot had no love for Arthur, as he had had none for Uther, but she hadn't thought him quite so ruthless as this.
"Are you asking me to kill her child as it comes forth?"
"She's our kinswoman and my guest," Lot said, "and thus sacred. I wouldn't invoke the curse of a kinslayer. I said only, The lives of newborn babies are frail unless they are very carefully tended. And if Morgaine has a difficult time of it, it might be well that none has leisure to tend the babe.
Morgause set her teeth and turned away from Lot. I must go to my kinswoman.
Behind her, Lot smiled. Think well on what I've said, my wife.
Down in the little hall, a fire had been lighted for the women. A kettle of gruel was boiling on the hearth, for it would be a long night. Fresh straw had been spread. Morgause had forgotten, as women happy with their children do, the dread of birth. But the sight of the fresh straw made her teeth clench and a shudder go down her back. Morgaine had been put into a loose shift, and her hair, unbound, was hanging loose down her back. She was walking up and down in the room, leaning on Megan's arm. It all had the air of a festival, and so indeed it was for the other women. Morgause went up to her kinswoman and took her arm.
Come now, you can walk with me a bit, and Megan can go and prepare the swaddlings for your child, she said.
Morgaine looked at her, and Morgause thought the younger woman's eyes were like those of a wild animal in a snare, awaiting the hunter's hand which will cut its throat.
"Will it be long, aunt?"
"Now, now, you mustn't think ahead," said Morgause tenderly. "Think, if you must, that you have been in labour most of this day, so it will go all the faster now."
But to herself she thought, "It won't be easy for her. She is so small, and she is reluctant to bear this child. No doubt there is a long, hard night ahead of her." And then she remembered that Morgaine had the sight, and that it was useless to lie to her. She patted Morgaine's pale cheek.
"No matter, child. We'll take good care of you. It is always long with a first child. They are loath to leave their snug nest, but we will do all we can. Did anyone bring a cat into the room?"
"A cat? Yes, she's there. But why, aunt?" Morgaine asked.
"Because, little one, if you have seen a cat kittening, you know that the cat bears her children purring, not crying out in pain. And so perhaps her pleasure in bearing will help you to feel the pains less," Morgause said, stroking the small furry creature. "It is a form of birth magic that perhaps you don't know in Avalon. Yes, you may sit down now and rest for a little, and hold the cat in your lap."
She watched Morgaine stroking the cat in a moment of respite, but then she doubled over again with the sharp cramps, and Morgause urged her to get up again and keep walking.
"As long as you can bear it, it goes quicker so," she said.
"I'm so tired," Morgaine said, moaning a little.
"You will be more tired before this is over," Morgause thought. But she only came and put her arms around the younger woman. "Here, lean on me, child."
"You are so like my mother," Morgaine said, clinging to Morgause, her face contorted as if she were about to cry. "I wish my mother were here."
And then she bit her lip as if she regretted her moment of weakness, and began slowly walking, walking up and down the crowded room. The hours dragged slowly by. Some of the women slept, but there were plenty to take their turn in walking with Morgaine, who grew more and more frightened and pale as time wore on. The sun rose, and still the midwives hadn't said Morgaine might lie down in the straw, though she was so weary that she stumbled and could hardly put one foot before another. One moment she said she was cold, and clutched her warm fur cloak about her. Another time she thrust it from her, saying that she was burning up. Again and again she retched and vomited, at last bringing up nothing but green bile. But she couldn't seem to stop retching, though they forced her to drink hot herb drinks, which she gulped down thirstily. But then
she would begin retching again. And Morgause, watching her, her mind full of what Lot had said, wondered if it would make any difference what she did or didn't do. It might well be that Morgaine couldn't survive this birth. At last she could walk no more, and they let her lie down, gasping and biting her lips against the recurrent pains. Morgause knelt beside her, holding her hand as the hours wore on. A long time past noon, Morgause asked her quietly, "Was he the child's father? Much bigger than you? Sometimes when a baby takes so long to be born, it means the child takes after his father and is too big for the mother." She wondered, as she had wondered before, who was this child's father? She had seen Morgaine looking on Lancelot at Arthur's crowning. If Morgaine had gotten herself with child by Lancelot, that might well explain why Vivien had been so angered that poor Morgaine had had to flee from Avalon. In all of these months, Morgaine had said nothing of her reasons for leaving the temple and of her child, no more than that it was gotten at Beltane fires. Vivien was so tender of Morgaine, she wouldn't have allowed her to bear a child to just anyone. But if Morgaine, rebelling against her chosen destiny, had taken Lancelot for lover, or had seduced him into the Beltane Grove, then it might explain why Vivian's chosen priestess, her successor as Lady of the Lake, fled from Avalon. But Morgaine said only, "I didn't see his face. He came to me as the Horned One." And Morgause knew, with her own faint trace of the sight, that the younger woman was lying. Why? The hours dragged by. Once Morgause went into the main hall, where Lot's men were playing at knucklebones. Lot sat watching, one of Morgause's younger waiting women on his lap, and his hand playing casually with her breasts. As Morgause came in, the woman looked up apprehensively and started to slide from his knees, but Morgause shrugged. "Stay where you are. We have no need of you among the midwives, and tonight, at least, I shall be with my kinswoman, and have no leisure to argue with you over a place in his bed. Tomorrow it might be another matter." The young woman bent her head, blushing. Lot said, "How goes it with Morgaine, sweeting?" "Not well," Morgause said. "It was never so hard for me." Then she cried out in a rage, "Did you ill-wish my kinswoman that she might never rise from childbed?" Lot shook his head. "You have the charms and magic in this kingdom, lady. I wish Morgaine no ill. God knows that would be a grievous waste of a pretty woman. And Morgaine's handsome enough, for all her sharp tongue. Though that she comes by honest enough from your side of the family, does she not, sweeting? And it adds salt to the dish." Morgause smiled affectionately at her husband. Whatever pretty toys he might choose for his bed, and the girl on his lap was just one more of them, she knew that she suited him well.
"Where is Morgaine, mother?" Gareth asked. "She said that today she would carve me another knight to play with."
"She is sick, little son." Morgause drew a long breath, the weight of anxiety settling over her again. "She'll be well enough soon," Lot said, "and then you will have a little cousin to play with. He shall be your foster brother and your friend. We have a saying that kin ties last for 3 generations, and foster ties for 7. And since Morgaine's son will be both to you, he will be more than your own brother."
"I'll be glad to have a friend," said Gareth. "Agravaine mocks me and calls me a silly baby, saying I'm too old for wooden knights."
"Well, Morgaine's son will be your friend when he's grown a bit," said Morgause. "At first he'll be like a puppy with his eyes not open. But in a year or two
He'll be old enough to play with you. But the goddess hears the prayers of little children, son. So you must pray to the goddess that she will hear you and bring Morgaine a strong son and health, and not come to her as the death crone.
And suddenly she began to cry. With astonishment, Gareth watched his mother weep, and Lot said,
"As bad as that, sweetheart."
Morgause nodded, but there was no need to frighten the child. She wiped her eyes with her kirtle. Gareth looked upward and said,
"Please, dear goddess, bring my cousin Morgaine a strong son, so we can grow up and be knights together."
Against her will, Morgause laughed and stroked the chubby cheek.
"Such a prayer I'm sure the goddess will hear. Now I must go back to Morgaine."
But she felt Lot's eyes on her as she left the hall, and remembered what he had said to her earlier, that it might be better for them all if Morgaine's son didn't survive.
"I shall be content if Morgaine comes alive through this," she thought.
And almost for the first time, she regretted that she had learned so little of the great magics of Avalon. Now, when she needed some charm or spell that could ease this struggle for Morgaine. It had gone so hard, so frightfully hard with the girl. Her own childbed had been nothing to this. She came back into the woman's hall. The midwives had Morgaine kneeling upright in the straw now to help the child slip from the womb, but she was slumping between them like a lifeless thing, so that two of them had to hold her upright. She was crying out now in gasps, then biting her lip against the cries, trying to be brave. Morgause went and knelt before Morgaine in the blood-flecked straw. She held out her hands, and Morgaine gripped them, looking at Morgause almost without recognition.
"Mother," she cried out.
"Mother, I knew you would come."
Then her face convulsed again, and she flung back her head, her mouth squared with unvoiced screams.
Megan said, "Hold her, my lady. No, behind her, like that. Hold her upright."
And Morgause, gripping Morgaine beneath the arms, felt the girl shaking, retching, sobbing as she fought and struggled blindly to get away from them. She was no longer capable of helping them or even letting them do what they must, but screamed aloud when they touched her. Morgause shut her eyes, unwilling to see, holding Morgaine's frail, convulsing body with all her strength. She screamed again,
"Mother! Mother!"
But Morgause didn't know whether she was calling on Igraine or on the goddess. Then she slumped backward into Morgause's arms, all but unconscious. There was the sharp smell of blood in the room, and Megan held up something dark and shriveled-looking.
"Look, Lady Morgaine," she said, "you have a fine son."
Then she bent over him, breathing into the little mouth. There was a sharp, outraged cry, the cry of a newborn shrieking with fury at the cold world into which he had come. But Morgaine lay collapsed in Morgause's arms, utterly exhausted, and couldn't even open her eyes to look at her child. The babe had been washed and swaddled. Morgaine had swallowed a cup of hot milk with honey in it, and herbs against the bleeding, and now she lay drowsing, weary, not even stirring as Morgause bent to kiss her lightly on the brow. She would live and heal, though Morgause had never seen a woman struggle so hard and yet live with a living child. And the midwife said that after all they had had to do to deliver this one alive, it was unlikely Morgaine would ever bear another. Which, Morgause thought, was just as well. She realized now that her own birthings, which hadn't been easy, had been nothing to this. She picked up the swaddled child, looking down at the small features. He seemed to be breathing well enough, though sometimes when a child didn't cry at once, and it was necessary to breathe into his mouth,
The breathing would fail again later, and he would die. But he was a healthy pink, even the tiny nails rosy. Dark hair, perfectly straight, dark, fine down on the small arms and legs. Yes, this one was fairy-born, like Morgaine herself. It might indeed be Lancelot's son, and so doubly near to Arthur's throne. The child should be given to a wet nurse at once. And then Morgause hesitated. No doubt, when she was a little rested, Morgaine would want to hold and suckle her child. It always happened that way, no matter how difficult the birth. And the harder the birth, the more joy the mother seemed to have in nursing her babe. The worse the struggle, the more was the love and delight when the babe was actually put to her breast. And then she thought, against her will, of Lot's words. "If I want to see Gawain on the throne, this child stands in his way." She hadn't wanted to listen when Lot said it, but with the child actually in her hands, she couldn't help thinking it wouldn't be so evil a thing if this child were overlaid by his nurse, or too weak to take suck. And if Morgaine had never held him or suckled him, she wouldn't feel as much grief. If it was the will of the goddess that he shouldn't live. "I only want to spare her sorrow." Morgaine's child, probably by Lancelot, both of the old royal line of Avalon. Should harm come to Arthur, the people would accept this child for his throne. But she wasn't even sure it was Lancelot's child. And although Morgause had borne 4 sons, Morgaine was the little girl she had petted and cared for like a doll. Carried in her arms, she had brushed her hair and washed her and brought her gifts. Could she do this to Morgaine's own child? Who was to say Arthur wouldn't have 12 sons by his queen, whoever she was? But Lancelot's son? Yes, Lancelot's son she could abandon to death without a qualm. Lancelot was no closer kin to Arthur than Gawain, yet Arthur preferred him, turned to Lancelot in everything. Just as she herself had always stood in Vivian's shadow, the unregarded sister, passed over for High Queen. She had never forgiven Vivian that she had chosen Igraine for Uther. Just so, the loyal Gawain would always stand in the shadow of the more flamboyant Lancelot. If Lancelot had played with Morgaine, or dishonoured her, all the more reason to hate him. For there was no reason Morgaine should bear Lancelot's bastard child in secrecy and sorrow. Did Vivian think her precious son too good for Morgaine, perhaps? Morgause had seen that the girl wept in secret all during these long months. Was she sick with love and abandonment? "Vivian, damn her, uses lives like knuckle-bones to be cast in play. She flung Igraine into Uther's arms without thought for Gaulois. She claimed Morgaine for Avalon. Will she make wreck of Morgaine's life too?" If she could only be sure it was Lancelot's child. As she had regretted, when Morgaine was in labour, that she hadn't enough magic to ease the birth, so now she regretted how little she knew of magic. She hadn't, when she dwelt in Avalon, had the interest nor the persistence to study the druid lore. But still, as Vivian's fosterling, she had learned one thing and another from the priestesses, who had petted and spoiled her. Offhand, and good-naturedly, as one indulges a child, they had shown her certain simple spells and magics. Well, now she would use them. She shut the doors of the chamber and lighted a new fire. She clipped 3 hairs from the silky down on the child's head, and bending over the sleeping Morgaine, cut a few of her hairs too. She pricked the child's finger with her bodkin, rocking him after to hush the fitful squalling. Then, casting secret herbs on the fire with the hairs and blood, she whispered a word she had been taught, and stared into the flames. And caught her breath in silence as the flames swirled, died,
and for a moment a face looked out at her.
A young face crowned with fair hair and shadowed by antlers casting a darkness over the blue eyes that were like Uther's.
Morgaine had spoken truth when she said he had come to her as the horned god. Yet she had lied.
Morgaine should have known. They had made the great marriage for Arthur then, before his crowning.
Had Vivian planned this too, a child that should be born of the two royal lines?
There was a small sound behind her, and she looked up to see that Morgaine had struggled to her feet and was standing there, clinging to the bed-frame, her face white as death. Her lips hardly moved. Only her dark eyes, sunken deep in her head with suffering, flickered from the fire to the sorcerous things on the floor before the hearth.
"Morgaine," she said, "swear to me, if you love me, swear to me that you will speak nothing of this to Lot or to any other. Swear it, or I will curse you with all the curses I know."
Morgaine laid the child in the cradle and turned to Morgaine, taking her arm and leading her back to the bed.
"Come, lie down, rest, little one.
We must talk about this."
"Arthur, why?"
"Was it Vivian's doing?"
Morgaine repeated, even more agitated.
"Swear to say nothing.
Swear never to speak of it again.
Swear it. Swear it."
Her eyes glittered wildly. Morgaine, looking at her, was afraid she would work herself into a fever.
"Morgaine, child, swear, or I curse you by wind and fire, sea and stone."
"No," Morgaine interrupted her, taking her hands to try to calm her.
"See, I swear it. I swear."
She hadn't wanted to swear. She thought,
"I should have refused. I should talk of this with Lot."
But it was too late. Now she had sworn. And Morgaine had no wish to be cursed by a priestess of Avalon.
"Lie still now," she said quietly. "You must sleep, Morgaine."
The younger woman closed her eyes, and Morgaine sat petting her hand and thinking,
"Gawain is Arthur's man, whatever happens. Lot would get no good from Gawain on the throne. This, no matter how many sons Arthur may have, this is his first. Arthur was reared Christian, and makes much of being king over Christians. He would think this child of incest his shame. It is just as well to know some evil secret of a king. Even of Lot, though I love him well, I have made it my business to know certain details of his sins and lecheries."
The cradled child woke and squalled.
Morgaine, as all mothers when a child cries, opened her eyes at the sound. She was almost too weak to move, but she whispered,
"My baby."
"Is that my baby, Morgaine?"
"I want to hold my baby."
Morgaine bent and started to put the swaddled bundle into her arms. Then she hesitated. If Morgaine once held the child, she would wish to suckle him. She would love him. She would concern herself about his welfare. But if he was put to a wet nurse before she ever looked on his face, well, then she wouldn't feel anything much for him, and he would be truly the child of his foster parents. It was just as well to have Arthur's firstborn son, the son he dared not acknowledge, feel the highest loyalty to Lot and Morgaine as his truest parents. That Lot's son should be his brother's rather than any sons Arthur might have when he should marry.
Tears were sliding weakly down Morgaine's face. She begged,
"Give me my baby, Morgaine. Let me hold my baby. I want him."
Morgaine said tenderly but relentlessly, "No, Morgaine,
You are not strong enough to hold him and suckle him. And she groped quickly for a lie which the girl, unskilled in midwifery, would believe. If you hold him even once, he will not suck from his wetness his breasts, so he must be given to her right away. You can hold him when you are a little stronger and he is feeding well. And though Morgaine began to cry and held out her arms, sobbing, Morgawes carried the child out of the room. Now, she thought, this will be Lot's fosterling, and we will always have a weapon against the High King. And now I have made certain that Morgaine, when she is well enough, will care little for him, and be content to leave him to me. Chapter 2 Guinevere, daughter of King Leodegrance, sat on the high wall of the enclosed garden, clinging to the stones with both hands, and watching the horses in the paddock below. Behind her was the sweet smell of kitchen herbs and pot herbs, the still-room herbs her father's wife used to make medicines and simples. The garden was one of her favourite places, perhaps the only outdoor place Guinevere really liked. She felt safer indoors, as a rule, or when securely enclosed. The walls around the kitchen garden made it nearly as safe as inside the castle. Up here, on top of the wall, she could see out over the valley, and there was so much of it, stretching farther than the eye could see. Guinevere turned her look back to the safety of the garden for a moment, for her hands were beginning to tingle with the numbness again, and her breath felt tight in her throat. Here, right on the very wall which enclosed her own garden, here it was safe. If she began to feel the strangling panic again, she could turn and slide down the wall and be safe again inside the garden. Her father's wife, Eleanor, had asked her once in exasperation when she said something like this. "Safe from what, child? The Saxons never come so far west as this. Where we are on the hill, we could see them 3 leagues off if they should come. It's the long view we have here that makes us safe, in heaven's name." Guinevere could never explain. Put like that, it sounded sensible. How could she tell the sensible, practical Eleanor that it was the very weight of all that sky and the wide lands which frightened her? There was nothing to be frightened of, and it was foolish to be frightened. But that didn't stop her from gasping and breathing hard and feeling the numbness rising up from her belly into her throat, her sweating hands losing all feeling. They were all exasperated with her, the house priest telling her that there was nothing out there but God's good green lands, her father shouting that he'd have none of that womanish nonsense in his house, so she had learned never to whisper it aloud. Only in the convent had anyone understood. Oh, the dear convent, where she had felt as snug as a mouse in her hole, and never, never having to go out of doors at all, except into the enclosed cloister garden. She would like to be back there, but now she was a woman grown, and her stepmother had little children and needed Guinevere. The thought of marrying made her afraid, too. But then she should have her own house where she could do as she would, and she would be the mistress. No one would dare to make fun of her. Down below the horses were running, but Guinevere's eyes were focused on the slender man in red, with dark curls shading his tanned brow, who moved among them. As swift he was as the horses themselves. She could well understand the name his Saxon foes gave him. Elf Arrow. Someone had whispered to her that he himself had fairy blood. Lancelot of the Lake, he called himself, and she had seen him in the magical lake, that dreadful day when she had been lost, in the company of that terrible fairy woman. Lancelot had caught the horse he wanted. One or two of her father's men shouted a warning, and Guinevere drew a breath of terror, herself wanting to cry out in dismay. That horse not even the king rode. Only one or two of his best trainers.
Lancelot, laughing, gestured disdain of their warning.